While you are having all this great time listening to reinforcement learning, I was stuck there, and so you obviously feel sorry for me, and somebody has to do this, and you had to do reinforcement learning. So I actually went to this workshop that was being organized by Office of Naval Research on Information Integration. Being a faculty member, you go to workshops to see if you can get money. So exploit what you know and get more money. So I went there, and I found pretty much after the first 3 minutes there that there's no chance of getting money. And yet I had a great time, learned a lot of stuff. And so I checked it out to a certain trade-off in reinforcement learning. What is that? What is the trade-off in reinforcement learning that I dealt with, basically, when I could not exploit what I had, but still felt happy anyway?
You explored your world.
What?
You explored your world.
Okay. What's the name of the reinforcement learning trade-off? I mean, I was just, and be nice to him. I mean, he taught you guys, so you have to tell me right away. What's the reinforcement learning trade-off that I went through, essentially, and why am I getting a call? I should not be getting a call. Okay. So, what is it? Exploration-exploitation trade-off. Okay? So, given the model of the world that you have, you can compute a greedy policy with respect to that. And, you know, use it to your benefit. That's what I went to this workshop. I know a little bit about planning and a little bit about information integration. I wanted to exploit that. Okay, so I went there and tried to actually get money. I am not going to get that money at any rate. But the reason I was happy is potentially because I explored not just that part, which is a good exploration too, but also I learned some other new stuff. And hopefully some other day later on, I get to do interesting work, okay? The more interesting part of reinforcement learning, I'm sure you know you heard about this last class, is unless you have non-zero probability of doing something other than the greedy policy, there is no guarantee that you would converge to optimal policy, okay? And so this is basically, so this is the mathematical version of what you always know, which is once in a while you have to take the details. Once in a while you have to see how, you know, just don't keep following the same exact path. You know, once in a while see what happens if you take this turn. And essentially that's what exploration exploitation trade-off was. And so anyway, that's the connection. In fact, there is one other thing that I remembered, which is that this is something, this is again nothing to directly do with the class, but there's a nice definition of PhD that I think all of you should know. You know, what are you supposed to be able to achieve at the end of your PhD? And you know, there are many, many definitions. The one very succinct one is that a PhD is somebody who knows something about everything and everything about something. Okay, so that's therein lies the exploration as well as the exploitation part. You need to know everything about some little thing, obviously. I mean, those of you who know everything about everything are part of the PhD cult, except you are super gods. Okay, but if the problem is normally you won't get a PhD if you don't know everything about something. The problem is you can always make that narrower and narrower and narrower and narrower and know everything about a very, very little thing. But that's not the only thing. You also need to have a breadth, because the moment you go and try to talk to somebody, you cannot connect at all unless you have better, you know, more of a breadth. Okay, so keep that nice little definition in mind and explore beyond what you're just doing, even in the case of PhD. Anyway, So I have things that I'm going to do today regarding, this is not 4.3, but so I'm just showing you our old plan of action that was the class before last class. I showed you this, and I said what we were doing was, you know, that class before last class, I talked about special cases of Markov decision processes, which are more relevant to some planning problems. Of particular interest to us was SSSP, stochastic shortest path problem, because that sort of looks very close to the usual classical planning problem with just stochastic dynamics thrown in. Okay, but we also spent a fair amount of time, for example, talking about how to model oversubscription planning model as an MDP problem. Okay, so we did that. Fine. Then we looked at the, and before that we already looked at the standard algorithms, which are value and policy iteration. And what we've been doing was, on that day I started talking about special cases, and I was going to start talk about efficient algorithms. It just about started and ended, and so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at efficient algorithms. And then in between, you did an interlude where you looked at reinforcement learning, which is essentially, if the model is not given to you, how do you learn the model? Okay. One of the interesting things is, as I mentioned last time, I mean the class before last, several of the reinforcement learning algorithms, which were meant to be used when you didn't have a model, may wind up getting used even when you have a model, because the model is too complex. So what you would do is, you take any reinforcement learning algorithm, right? And if you, instead of actually acting in the world, if you have a good enough model, you can substitute acting in the world to simulation of the model. Okay? Then essentially you get to do reinforcement learning in simulation on a complex model. Okay? And this is in fact something that has been done. In fact, one idea that we will talk about called real-time dynamic programming was originally invented as a way of handling reinforcement learning. But variations of it, where you substitute execution, I mean you substitute simulation to execution. And whenever I say simulation, I toss a coin. Essentially, I have the probabilities of, you know, what various outcomes can happen when you do various actions, right? And you get to simulate. If I know the exact probabilities, I can simulate this. I almost don't need the world. Actually, not almost. I don't need the world. The only reason I'm simulating rather than executing, as I said again, you know, the class before last, is sometimes when the model is complex enough, exact exploitation of the model might be too costly. This was the reason why inference on Bayes networks, whose parameters you completely know. You know the structure, you know the CPTs, everything, and yet you might do the inference by Monte Carlo methods. So what exactly are you doing? Why is that any better than the guy who goes onto the road and actually evaluates real scenarios to figure out the probability? The difference is, you get to do it in your mind what he or she has to do in the real world, which is much, much more time consuming. Okay. Anyway, so that's the reinforcement learning stuff that you talked about is still related to inference on Markov decision processes, even when you know the full model. But of course, if you don't know the model, this is a great direction, basically. Okay. So that's what you talked about last class, and so today I'll be looking at more about efficient algorithms. Wow, this came back. So this is the ugly slide, so I should just show it to you so that you know that it doesn't look as ugly as it did last time. So anyway, we talked about the general models of Markov decision processes and the special cases, right? These are the special cases we looked at, and we spent some time on the stochastic shortest path and as well as the oversubscription planning part. Okay, we also noticed that for these special cases, you can write Bellman equations. Okay, the general Spellman equation works for all the cases. It's just that you can also write, you know, more specialized equations for the special cases. So for example, in the stochastic shortest path algorithms, it makes more sense to talk about not the value but the expected cost. Okay, you can always say expected cost is nothing but it's just I have a value which is negative and you can live your life with negative numbers. But since we all like positive numbers so much, we can think directly in terms of cost, expected cost. Okay, so you have a little, this is basically, usually you use the J instead of V for expected cost, the notationally. Okay, and then, so this is a J star equation which has a minimization as against a maximization. Because value would be maximized, cost would be minimized. And remember that in this model, in the classical, the stochastic shortest path planning model, you only get costs. You don't ever get rewards. Okay, you get a zero reward and you die the moment you reach the goal state. Okay, up until then you only get costs. So the real question is to reduce the amount of cost you extend. Okay, so then this of course is the version that you talked about last class more often, mostly, which is the normal reinforcement learning where you look at the value maximization version of the MDP. And this is the more general version anyway. And then we also looked at the probability maximization version where the idea is all you're trying to do is compute the expected probability of reaching the goal from the current state. So the only thing that you are interested in this probability model is you don't care about the amount of time, I mean the cost that you incurred in reaching the goal. You just want to maximize, you want to come up with a policy that maximizes the probability that you reach the goal starting from this state. By the way, one other thing that I hope you realize is that, I mean, this is like a very fundamental point. It's just, you know, I'm just repeating it after 3 days of, three classes, I know, of MDPs, okay? Is the value functions are very tricky, you know, in terms of understanding. Make sure that you realize that this is the optimal value function. It is what is the max, the lowest cost that you would pay from here if you were to follow the optimal path. This is not the lowest cost paid by some random guy who just randomly picks an action. You know, if you were picking the optimal thing, if you're doing the optimal thing at every point, this is the best you can expect in terms of the cost or the value. Okay, and that's the reason why you have this max and min thrown in the Bellman equation. And then we looked at the modeling of the soft goal problems as deterministic MDPs. And then we started talking about ideas for efficient algorithms last time, and the general ideas can be split into like these special case, you know, these three directions. On one hand, you have heuristic search and using reachability information and using something which looks more like a heuristic search algorithm. Okay. In particular, the big issue is that the standard MDP algorithms are essentially polynomial in the size of the entire state space. And even if in fact state space is disconnected and you know that you are starting in a state in one of the components, you still will find the optimal thing to do from all the components, from all the states. Okay, it makes sense to actually, all you need to do is to know the optimal thing to do in every state that you are likely to find yourself in. You know, do you understand what I'm saying? So if you never ever want to travel by plane or ship, you guys don't need to know what is the optimal thing to do in Hyderabad, India, because you'll never get there. If you don't travel by plane or a ship, there's no way of walking. And I'm assuming you won't swim, okay, that long a distance. So based on the actions that you have, certain parts of the world are just not reachable to you. So you don't need to know what's the optimal thing to do. So if you're trying to learn, you know, doing it in the MDP way, in the value and policy iteration way, you will know what's the optimal thing to do if you find yourself in Hyderabad, whether you will ever need it or not. Okay. So the advantage in these guys try to exploit is, if you know something about the states where you're starting from, can you use that to only look at parts of the space? Okay. And furthermore, whether, of course, all of these algorithms, both these algorithms as well as the value and policy iteration algorithms, are interested in converging fast. You know, for the states, it would actually be nice, even from a heuristic point of view, even from a practical point of view, if you can get to the right values and the right actions for the more likely states, and then figure out what to do for the less likely states, okay, slowly. That would be better than trying to get everybody at the same time, everybody's optimal action at the same time. Okay, but that idea, actually, that idea that I just mentioned, you could do that from just variations of value and policy iteration algorithms. In fact, in the value iteration algorithm, if you do prioritized sweeping, where rather than make every state's value be changed, you pick the states whose values you're going to recompute. And as long as there is a probability of picking every state infinitely often, you will be, you know, you will be guaranteed to terminate with the optimal policy. But then this way of doing it, you're more likely to, you can say which are the states for which I would get the optimal values faster. You can decide that. Okay. Anyway, so in general, putting directionality and making convergence faster and avoiding parts of the space that you will never ever reach is the way you try to improve the search. Okay. And of course, when you talk about heuristic search, you need to talk about heuristics, and we will talk about how to use those too. And then there is the other big issue is using factored representations. Okay, using factored representations, and which essentially involves you know by now what factored representations are. You start just talking in terms of explicit states. You want to provide action descriptions and value descriptions and reward descriptions in terms of, you know, parameterized descriptions of the state. If they have state variables, then you just want to talk in terms of state variables. Okay, that's another way of improving this efficiency. And a related idea here, and in fact, it's not very clear RTDP should be here or here, is another way of improving efficiency is essentially look for approximation algorithms for computing the optimal policy. And those would involve essentially using the model and doing Monte Carlo on it. Okay, so you do simulation of the model rather than you know, in this case, you are computing the optimal policy. You know, in all the value and policy iteration, you are interested in computing the optimal policy. In other in this class of scenarios, you would know upfront that I am not interested in computing the optimal policy. I would do approximate policy construction, and it would be most interesting to see if you can quantify how far would you be from the optimal. Okay, and so we will actually look at some version of that today, which is RTDP, and we'll look at another version of it next class when I'll force you to read a recent paper which uses that. Okay. Anyway, that's the direction. And then I went through this also last time, you know, heuristics for heuristic search versus dynamic programming, and then also asked you to think of any lower bound on J star is going to be a heuristic. Do you understand what I'm saying? So J star is the optimal expected cost from every point, right? So any lower bound on J star would be an admissible heuristic. Okay. So even if, in fact, you're thinking in terms of deterministic search on, you know, deterministic MDPs, which will also will have J stars, right? Lower bounds on J stars are the heuristics that you use in deterministic heuristic search. Okay, so when we try to do heuristics for MDPs, we assume upfront that we will get a lower bound, and then we'll start talking about how to do heuristics. Okay, this is where we stopped last time, and I'm hopefully getting you back into the same wavelength that we were, and let's look at some this specific idea of LAO star. Okay, so the idea of talking about heuristic search is, you, as I said, In the normal deterministic scenarios, you can think of planning as finding a path in the space of states. Okay? In the case when you have observational actions in particular and you have belief states, you will think of finding a plan essentially involves finding a directed subgraph, directed acyclic subgraph of this AND OR graph. Okay? And then for the MDPs, it turns out that in fact you can think of doing, you know, extension of this. So this is already a special case, general case of this. So AO star search, we talked about it, AO star search is already a special case, I'm sorry, as a general case of A star search, where A star essentially assumes that, you know, there are only OR branches, there are no AND branches. So an AND branch really is a hyper edge. Okay, if you had a graph, if you had written a hypergraph, then an edge would be connecting more than two vertices, can connect more than two vertices. An AND graph is essentially connecting one vertex to multiple vertices. That's the AND edge. Okay, so this is already a general case of this, and what we will see is if you want to do MDP search, one way of doing it, this is just one way, and it's a reasonable way, you know, as a heuristic search, is to compute the cyclic, potentially cyclic subgraph of the AO star graph corresponding to the problem. Okay. Now, what happens in this case is, if you're thinking about this as an MDP, this is the initial state you start from. Okay. Here is one action you could do. Here is another action you can do. And if you do this action, you may go into this state or this state with different probabilities. If you do this action, you may go into this state or this state with different probabilities. Now, what you're trying to do, of course, is to get from every path into the goal state. Okay? So what I'd really like to do is, so there is a goal state. This is a goal state, one of the goal states here. Okay? So this, if I start from here, if I take this action, if I am lucky and this outcome happens, I get to this state, then if I take this action, I'll be in the goal state. Okay. Now, of course, that's not a full policy because when I did this action, I may have gotten this state, in which case I still need to know what to do if I find myself in that state to get to the goal state. And furthermore, it's not even clear whether this is the action to be doing or this is the action to be doing from state S0. Okay, so what an AO star search normally does is it is essentially trying to look for acyclic subgraphs, okay, partial subgraphs, until the entire subgraph ends in goal nodes, the nodes that cannot that need not be expanded anymore. In a problem reduction point of view, that basically those are the problems that are already primitive. You don't need to do anything about them. If you view them in terms of the MDP idea, then those are the goals, those are the states from which no more transitions are possible. Okay, no more transitions are possible. Now, in general, if you're trying to do searches on this, as I said, you know, for this, it would be just a path. For this, it would be an acyclic graph. The tricky part here is it could be a cyclic graph here. So, in fact, here, what if I actually, when I do an action from this action from here, I can, I mean, so when I do this action, when I do this action, I, one of the possibilities is going back to the state as zero. Okay, so what that means in that case is it's actually an acyclic subgraph, and you're trying to, I'm sorry, cyclic subgraph, and you're trying to find the best cyclic subgraph. Now, why does cyclic subgraphs create trouble? This is the tricky point that, I mean, I hope you understood it. If you read LAO star, and you know, you would have understood this. You know, but even if you did, probably you forgot because I've been saying we'll discuss this paper for I think three classes, and we're finally discussing it today. The point is that suppose you have a zero, right, and then it is being it's being connected to S1 and S2, and then S2 is connected to a goal node, and S1 is connected to a goal node, S2 is connected to a goal node. Okay? Now suppose these are all zero cards, zero rewards. Think of SSSP. Okay? So there are casts here. This is 3, this is 4, let's say. And then this action as a whole has a cost, let's say 7. Okay, then you can talk about what is the cost of this node here. Cost of this node is backed up from the leaf node cost. Now during search, when some of these paths haven't yet reached the goal state, so if you reach the goal state, you know what the value is. It's 0. The reward is 0. If you haven't reached the goal state here, you have up to this point right now, you still need to know what the value is and you need to back it up. That would be the place where you need a heuristic. You need some bound. So J star basically tells you the, one of the nice things of having goal states in stochastic shortest path is for the goal states you know the optimal value, optimal cost already. Because if you're already in the goal state, the best thing you can do is not do anything. You're already, you know, that's the expected cost of reaching the goal state from goal state, 0. For anybody else, you need an estimate. But if I give you a J hat estimate such that J hat is basically, you know, sort of a bound on J star. And if it's a lower bound, of course, it'll be great. That will ensure that it'll be admissible search. But if it's a bound, then if it's especially a lower bound, then if I can give you J hat of S1 for this, then I can use the real value here, estimated value here, and compute the value of taking this AND branch from S0. Now during search, what happens is you would then be, this is an AND branch here, and from S0 there is a different AND branch, which involves its own states, S9, S10. And they have their own J hat S9 and J hat S10. If you go this way, there is a backed up value you can expect. If you go this way, there is a backed up value you can expect. Normally during AO star search, just like in A star search, you will try to take the path that currently seems to be the shortest expected length, shortest estimated length, which is G plus H, right? In AO star, you're doing the exact same thing, where the estimates are taken at the leaf nodes, and the G value is being computed in terms of those estimates. So that's the total path. So basically, when I back it up, then the value I'm getting here is the expected cost of the total solution in this direction. Estimated cost. I shouldn't use the word expected, because in deterministic search, you don't may not have any stochasticity. Estimated cost in this direction, estimated cost in this direction. And you pick the direction that is currently cheaper, and you keep going. And as long as J hat is a lower bound on J star, the first path that ends into all goal nodes, that means the first AND subgraph, all of whose leaf nodes are goal nodes, would be the optimal subgraph. That's the nice part. That's the reason AO star is interesting. And that's the same reason A star is interesting. A star is just a special case of AO star where there is no AND branches, it's just all R. Okay. Now the trick is, if I want to do the same idea for these kinds of graphs, the one tricky problem is what exactly does it mean to back up? What exactly does it mean to back up in a cyclic graph? By the way, did you actually understand how I back up here? I'm assuming you kind of figured out what it means to back up on each of the subgraphs. If I know the numbers here and I know the probabilities, you multiply the probabilities by the numbers and take the expected cost. That's the backed up value. Okay? And if there is so basically that's essentially what you're doing. The problem is if you have cycles, then you can get into cycle. You can keep trying to update that way. Now, the point that LAO star paper basically says is in that scenario, when you have cycles, you are simultaneously solving for a consistent set of values for all the leaf nodes. Okay, which is basically a value iteration algorithm. And the most interesting point he makes is what you are doing here is actually a value iteration. It's just a few steps of the value iteration. Okay. Now here's the interesting thing. If you have a finite domain, I'm sorry, if you have a finite horizon, MDP, you can write its entire search space essentially in terms of this kind of an AO star tree of finite depth. Okay? And then you can compute the values at different levels and back it up. Okay? So this backup procedure is really very similar to value iteration, and in fact, when you have cycles, you have to do the full value iteration, not just the special case. That was the point that this paper makes. Okay? And if you do that, then as the question, that, so you can then basically, it's like a heuristic search, it's an AO star heuristic search. Okay? The backup process, which basically we used to take these numbers and multiply by the probabilities and add them up, now it actually requires that you do a value iteration on those states until you converge. And then you take, those are the actual values, and then do your best direction. Okay? Now, what's interesting about all these algorithms is A star, AO star, and AO star, they're all using heuristics. They can all use heuristics. Okay? The heuristic I was using here is actually using the lower bound on J star. Okay? Now, one question I have, okay, so let me show you the way LO star works. It's just a little animation, but you really should, you know, if you want more details, read the paper. Okay? So here is your full graph, and you're trying to figure out how to expand an acyclic subgraph of this, which will correspond to the solution. Okay? So every optimal policy corresponds to a cyclic subgraph of this graph. That's the basic point. Okay? So then you put the S0 in the fringe, and then you expand a state on the fringe, any state on the fringe. Okay? When you expand this, you basically consider these two subtrees which come in, because you could have done this action or this action. Okay, and if you do this action, these new states come, and you can also go back to the old state. Now, the important thing that you want to keep in mind is this kind of cycles are there in A star search too, right? You do go back to old states in A star search. Why is that any different from this? No. This is a sanity test, by the way. I mean, you have to understand this, otherwise you have no idea what I'm talking about. You probably don't have any idea anyway, but you should try. Yes?
There's no way to go back in A-star. It's just a backtrack in A-star. It's a choice point. Mm-hmm. Here, there's actually a way to go.
So here is the deal, okay? Think of this as a normal A-star search graph. Okay? Is there a problem? There in A-star search, normally in any normal grid, you can go back to the state you came from in arbitrary complicated cycles.
No, but the problem here is that S0 could end up being its own parent.
But that's true in any cyclic search.
Yeah,
in A-star search, you separate states from nodes, remember? And a node can be the same state, multiple nodes can correspond to the same state. So what's the big deal I'm trying to make? Why is it that cycles are fine for A star search? I mean, you don't need a new algorithm. You do deal with cycles in A star search, right? What do you do for cycles in A star search? Wake up. What? And so there's something called duplicate detection. So what does duplicate detection do? If any action you are about to take promises to take you back to a state that you have expanded, you say, no, thank you, we don't need you. Why can't I do that here? Exactly. The point is, each action was only taking you to a particular state in a deterministic scenario. So the guy who wants to take you back, right, you say, sorry, we don't need you. We will take somebody else who will take us forward. Here, even though these look like three different branches, it's an AND branch. When you do this action, you don't have any control as to where this action is going to take you. Sometimes it takes you here, sometimes it takes you here, sometimes it takes you there. So if you start saying for every action that has non-zero probability of taking you to an already expanded node, sorry, we don't need you, you will be done with search very fast and say no policy, no solution. Do you understand? You have to get that, otherwise you don't need to write LIO star search. You know, I mean, cycles are there everywhere. The problem is here the choice, you don't get to decide not to get into the cycle. You have to live with the cycle, because some of the actions will get you back to the same state, but they also with high probability get you forward. In any optimal solution for A star search problem, no optimal solution for an A star search problem will ever contain cycles, period. Whereas an optimal solution for an AO star, I mean for this kind of an MDP problem, may very well get you, very well have non-zero probability of you reaching the same state. Okay, so this is the reason why LIO star had to be done, and so you basically, in this case, you have this action and this action. You can, if you do this, you can come here, here or here, and you can do this, you can come here and here. Now the problem, of course, is you are trying to estimate what should be the backed up value from S0 to S0, but for this, it would have been very easy. If this cycle wasn't there, all that would be needed is you would get the H values for this and this and this, which are the leaf nodes. Combine the H values, just like in the min-max search, just like in the expect-max search. But here, this guy's value is defined in terms of itself. Whatever you're backing up is determining what you're backing up. That's the classic case of value iteration. So what you then have to do, so these are the H values for all the leaf nodes, okay? And then for all these other nodes, the backed up value cannot be just backed up by individual pieces. You have to do it globally as a value iteration until they stabilize. Do you understand? That's the point. Okay? So in this case, you perform the value iteration on all the expanded states, where you assume these guys have the values that you already given, and everybody else essentially will change their values as the iteration goes on. Okay? And whatever the value iteration says is this guy's value, that is its backed up value. And once I give you the values, you know what is the direction to go. Remember from the min-max search, the moment you know what is the backed up value of every node, you know what is the direction to go. Because the child who gave you your backed up value is the direction you go. The same thing here. So once you compute the backed up values correctly, then you know which direction to go. Okay? So now basically at this point you recomputed, you computed the values. Now once the values are backed up, then he essentially realizes that the right direction to go is this. That's the greedy graph, because that's the one from which he's getting his best value. Okay? And now you expand the fringe again. Okay? And you keep doing this until sometimes basically, like for example in this case, I turned back. So every time I will do a value iteration on all the expanded nodes, the nodes that have actually been visited once. Okay? And then the other thing is your greedy policy can keep shifting directions. Just like in A star search, you think this is the direction to go, and then after a while F says, no, go this direction, then you go this direction, etc. Okay? The only point is, as long as H is a lower bound, you're guaranteed to get the optimal policy. Okay, the neatest point in LIO star algorithm is that it now makes MDP policy construction to be something very similar to heuristic search, AO star search at any rate. Okay, as long as you understand AO star search, which is just a little extension of A star search. Okay, and then you extend it a little more by thinking in terms of backup as a value iteration on a subset of nodes, then you are basically doing heuristic search to compute the optimal policy. Okay? And then you stop, of course, when there are no, essentially, and then you stop when you essentially don't have any no fringe nodes in the current greedy policy. That means all the nodes of the current greedy policy are ending in a gold node. Yes, sir. What? Yes, yes, that is the whole point, exactly. That's the whole point. Right? So when you have a Markov addition process, the moment you throw in probabilities, you can never give upper bound on the number of steps you need to go to a state. You can only talk about mean arrival times. Right? Markov chains is the same issue too. So the upper bound is infinity the moment you throw in our probabilities. Right, so that's the interesting part about LAO star. You know, there's this the backup is becoming value attrition. Okay, so it stops when all the nodes in the greedy graph have been expanded. That means all of them have ended into a goal node. Okay, and now the interesting thing is the first time you reach that, you can say I have reached the optimum. I don't have to look at anything else but partially expanded. That's the whole beauty of any kind of heuristic search, because heuristic search allows you to declare victory without having exhausted the space. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's the whole point of A-star search, right? I mean, if you look at every possible path and then say this is the best, then no big deal, okay? If you have the, you know, A-star search allows you to declare victory the first time you pick a node to expand and find that it's a goal node. And the entire mechanism is made in such a way that if you were to have H, which is a lower bound, I mean, when H is equal to 0, then A star search basically becomes uniform cost search. Okay? When H is a lower bound, which is more than 0, then you are, in essence, stopping all the partial paths, which you know for sure cannot be better than this path. Because your estimate may not be accurate, but it's a lower bound. So if the lower bound path, this direction, is already worse than what I have in my hand, there's no point in expanding that. Okay, that's the same thing you're doing now for A-star search. So this discussion also brings up the difference between dynamic programming on one hand and heuristic search on the other hand, and both live together very happily in a way. Okay, when you did value iteration, you're doing dynamic programming. All the nodes need to know what their backup values are. When you decided to go in one direction, you're doing heuristic search. You're picking one branch over other branch. So you're doing both. You need both, really. Okay? Okay, so you are doing dynamic programming plus heuristic search, and if you have an admissible heuristic, you get an optimal policy. It only expands the part of the reachable state space. It doesn't have to expand all possible subgraphs. It can get by. The beauty of this is that it can get by without looking at all the parts of the tree. So in particular, if I have this situation where my entire state space is partitioned into multiple components, and those components, there's basically no way of going from one component to another component, you can clearly, and S0 is in component 1, you can clearly see that LAO star would not touch any states in the other components, because there are no actions that will get it there. Simple. Okay. What's more interesting is it can even consider even within the connected component, it doesn't look at all the subgraphs. It doesn't have to look at all possible cyclic subgraphs which end in goals. The first one it finds it can stop, because if it has admissible heuristic, it would have guaranteed that the first one it finds is optimal. Okay. Now, it's only going to output a partial policy. You have to realize that. If you define policy to be for every state of the state space, I should know what to do. Optimal action. LAO star will never output a full policy, because in the case I just pointed out, if there are multiple components which are disconnected, LAO star, when it ends, will only tell you the optimal thing to do in the state that you will reach. And that's a reasonable thing, because if I never plan to ever reach Hyderabad, why do I need to know what's the optimal time to have dinner in Hyderabad? It just doesn't require, you don't need it. The moment you throw in actions which can take you from here to Hyderabad, then that guarantees off. You need to know them. You need to know them, you know, to be optimal. Okay? And then there are all sorts of interesting, you know, speed ups you can do. You can expand all the states in the fringe at once. You can perform policy iteration instead of value iteration. Notice that I was doing value iteration to compute the, you know, the values of the expanded nodes, right? But policy iteration can always substitute for value iteration, and it does it faster for the same reason we talked about earlier. You can do that here too. And then, of course, you can do the games, all the games you know from the heuristic search, which is if you want to get done faster, you know, be more greedy, so you basically wind up giving higher weight to the heuristic, F value. In F value winds up giving higher weight to the H value rather than G value. All those things can be done. Okay. And one other thing which will come back later is this entire LIO star that I described just till now, it was described in the space of explicit states. This is not surprising because in 471 you learned A star in the space of explicit states first and then talked about factored states. Okay. Now the interesting thing is you can do this entire thing obviously in factored representations, and I mentioned two classes back that you can have, for example, you could have ADDs, you know, algebraic decision diagrams to represent value functions. Okay. And in fact, there is a version of LIO star called symbolic LIO star, which does all those steps in terms of algebraic decision algorithms, algebraic decision diagrams. Okay, which is kind of interesting. Okay. I will go back to that slide in a minute, but let's look at this first. I don't have my watch. And I have zero sense of time, so I probably should put some notion of the time, which is 4 o'clock. That's good. Okay. How do you derive heuristics? I said you can get heuristics, right? I actually mentioned this last time, and I said, well, shortest deterministic path in a maze kind of a scenario would be lower bound on the expected cost, right? Fine. The question is, here are two ideas, okay? Tell me which one would make sense. Idea one, for every action, consider the most likely outcome of that action. So remember, each action essentially done in a state will get you, let's say, if you do this action from S0, okay, with 0.7 probability it gets you to S2, 0.3 probability it gets you to S4. What I would do to make these actions deterministic, these transitions deterministic, okay, is to skip the 0.3 branch. Another way of thinking about it is what you had was an AND OR graph where actions correspond to AND branches. Right? If I have just an OR graph, it will become a deterministic problem. And the shortest path in the deterministic problem can somehow be used as a heuristic for the shortest path in the AND OR, expected shortest path in the AND OR graph. My question then is, if I have a, you know, an action as an AND, you know, under every state, you know, to make it deterministic, I need to cut off, one way of making it deterministic is to cut off everything other than the most likely outcome. That's one idea, okay? And it will give you a simple graph from, in which there would be a shortest path, okay? The question is, would that shortest path actually be the lower bound on the expected shortest path from every state? No? Why?
Well, your 0.3 can take you back to the result stage.
Okay, so the idea is that doing this is mostly, basically you're determinizing the problem, determinizing the actions by picking them as if they're going to, the action becomes just its most likely outcome. But that may not wind up being the least cost outcome. It's the most probable outcome, but it's not necessarily the least cost outcome. Okay, even locally. Okay, so this is easy, but, and it will be a deterministic graph, but the shortest path in that deterministic graph will not be a lower bound on J star. Nice, you know this now. Okay, the second idea is if I have an AND branch, and I want to make it, you know, I have a graph basically with some AND branches and some OR branches. So here, this is an AND branch, this is an AND branch, and these two are together OR'd, right? My idea previously was from here pick one branch, from here pick one branch, corresponding to the most likely version. My second idea, remove the and-ness. Act as if every possible outcome of the action is independently possible and you somehow have choice as to which outcome will happen. That will be a deterministic graph too. You now increase the number of actions, essentially. Okay? Now, if you find the shortest path on that, would that be guaranteed to be a lower bound?
Sure.
Yes. Okay? So, in fact, you can make names for these. The first version would be, you know, I'm using determinization. You're determinizing a stochastic transition graph and computing the paths in that determinized graph and trying to see if it would be a lower bound, I mean, whether it will have certain properties. And there are multiple ways of determinizing. Okay? One way of determinizing is this, which is basically pick the most likely transition. There's nothing wrong with it, but for the fact that it won't be the, it won't be admissible. It could be reasonably informed. It could be close enough to J star, but it won't be admissible. This, on the other hand, would be admissible. But this may actually be quite uninformed. Why? Because if there is a whole bunch of actions and there is always, you know, if I give you some action which with exponentially low probability magically takes you to where you want to go, which is what kids do, right? I mean, there is this homework deadline staring at you, there is some term paper deadline staring at you, and you have various things you can do, all of which have, you know, stochastic outcomes. There is always this small, exponentially small probable outcome that the teacher would have a heart attack and there won't be a class tomorrow. Right? And in which case, right, you don't, if you determinize your problem to compute the heuristic based on that, you would get a heuristic which is admissible. But it's useless because it's like H equal to zero. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this idea, if this idea is the most likely outcome determinization, this idea is all outcome determinization. But the problem is all outcome determinization is admissible but uninformed. Most likely outcome determinization may actually be more informed. So if you have some notion of all the states in the world, right, and you know exactly how J star looks, this is the J star values for the various states, right, the all outcome determinization is more likely to be like this. It will be admissible, but it will be far enough from J star. The most likely outcome determinization is more likely to be like this. Which is better? You know, one is kind of more informed, but it's not admissible. You don't even talk about informedness unless you are admissible. The other is admissible, but it's quite bad. What you really need to do is to consider somehow taking into account the likelihood of the path in determinizing. One idea, in fact, is something that, these are the two easy ideas, but one, a third idea which you will hear about next class when you read this little paper, is to essentially consider sample futures. Okay, so for each action that you have, actually toss a coin and say what the coin says should be the direction you should take. Do you understand what I'm saying? So every time you come to an AND branch, you toss a coin, pick the branch, and then you make an entire determinization. So for each action, you only pick one direction. So with respect to that, compute the shortest path. Then again toss a coin and get one more entire deterministic graph. Find the shortest path. You take the averages of these shortest paths. Okay? That's going to be sort of between this and that. What? It may not be admissible, but it could be more informed. So the point is, if you give up on admissibility, then one of the advantages is, it could be more, see, the most likely outcome the only point I'm trying to make is that heuristic would wind up being between these two heuristics. And as you increase the number of sampled futures, you can improve its quality. Quality being a non-binary idea, which is, you know, the closer to the J-star. Okay? So, in a way, interestingly enough, you can think of computing heuristics from, basically, this idea of computing heuristics is saying, convert the problem into deterministic version, solve it, use the solution there as the bound for the stochastic version. Okay? But, you know, keep this in mind, but that's one way you can get the heuristics. Okay, the third version that I talked about, using multiple futures, we'll look at it more closely next week. Okay? But it sort of makes sense with respect to one is sort of too optimistic, over-optimistic. Okay? Heuristics, if they are optimistic at all, they would be inadmissible. Right? Optimism is the bane of heuristics. They shouldn't be optimistic. Right? Let me see, wait. This one is too optimistic because the all outcome determinization essentially gets to pick the specific path, specific likelihood, you know, specific path that will get it to the goal. So it's overly optimistic. Okay? Most likely outcome looks like a reasonable idea, but it would be inadmissible. And the question that you will talk more about next class, and I mentioned it today, is would it be any better if you sampled the futures and computed the paths for each future and averaged? Okay? So a second idea, very similar to LA star. I mean, this discussion about heuristic is relevant to us because you needed the heuristics for the leaf nodes, right? That's how LA star was proceeding. Okay? A different version of doing heuristic search using bounds on J star is this idea called real-time dynamic programming. Okay? In fact, it's interesting for a different reason because there are multiple ways of explaining it. The way I'm explaining it here, it makes it look like reinforcement learning, except execution became simulation. So this is basically using Monte Carlo methods to figure out optimal policy. Okay? And so what you do is you do a trial. Okay? A trial is like computing the future I computed there. Every time you get to an action, you actually toss a coin and see which direction you should be taking. The coin that you pick will have the probabilities exactly like the probabilities of the action. This is a generalized, you know, n-faced coin, such that the probability of getting phase one would be the probability of getting outcome one, etc. And you then toss that coin. Okay? That's how you computed futures there, in my third idea. You could do this here, except the moment you compute a single future, you essentially have an entire path. In my idea previously, I have this entire AO star graph, right? I determinized it by picking every AND into a single R branch. I have an entire A star graph now, and then I computed the shortest path within that. The version I'm doing here, the trial is go from a state, okay, start from a state, okay, pick an action, pick the outcome that's likely to happen, and basically by tossing the coin, get to the next state, pick an action there, pick an outcome that will happen by simulation again, until you reach the sync state. When you reach the sync state, you have a complete path. It may not be optimal in any sense. It's a complete path. Okay? And once you have that complete path, given that this information is there, you can redo the updates on the nodes on that path, such that their values now will be updated to take into account the fact that there is this path to the goal state. So in the beginning, all these states probably were just given infinities as their cost values. I mean, not infinities, zeros as the cost values. Okay? And then I started from one of these states and I just went, so here is the picture. So I started from one of these states, I picked an action, and then I basically simulated the action. Okay? simulating the action is tossing the coin, figuring out which particular state will happen. Okay? It's not just randomly picking it. It's picking it randomly using the distribution that was given to you by the action. It's not uniform random. It's not some other random. You know, not all randoms are created equal. You're using the exact distribution that's given by the action. Okay, that's what you know about that action. So when you toss the coin, it said, well, I go here. The coin said that in this particular case. Okay? So then I go to that state, I pick the action from there with the action and do the same thing until I reach a goal state. Now I have an entire trial. Now the interesting thing is, imagine that this guy was thinking, you know, in the beginning you thought everybody had different cost values. Okay? Now they can look around now, and given the fact that now I have this path to the goal, my minimum cost is now going to be the minimum of whatever I thought was my cost and the cost of going here this way. Do you understand? So there is an action here, there's a cost for that action. Okay, the minimum cost of going from this state to the goal state now is previous minimum cost, previous expected cost, and the minimum of that and the path through this. Okay? Yes, second. And you update this now, and similarly you can update all these guys. So you update in value iteration, you are updating the values of the states, right? Here also you are updating the values of the states, except you are updating it with respect to sequential trials, you know, line trials. But the interesting thing is, if you do these trials infinitely often, you are guaranteed to get the optimal value function. And the moment you get the optimal value function, you know the path. You know the policy too. Okay? The nice thing about this RTDP is you can do all these fun things. Either you can do a trial which ends in goal, or you can do a trial which, even if it doesn't end in goal, it ends in some state, you can take the value of that state and then back it up. Basically, when you are recomputing, you are backing up. So everybody here thought they're as good as a particular number. And then now I found you a specific path, you know, through this class which goes to a place where gold is. Right now you can change your, you can update your cost work, you know, the cost function, given that this path exists. Okay? So this is basically RTDP. And the interesting thing is, this trial, it could have been, in the case I am doing, I am actually simulating the action. Originally when RTDP was developed, they mentioned, they essentially wanted it to be executed in the world. So I can do this exact same thing, except instead of tossing the coin, I am from this state, I do an action, actually do the action, let the world tell me where I go. Okay? And then when I come to this state, I do the action from here, let the world tell me where I go. There is no difference in the algorithm. It's possible that you won't live to actually run the algorithm. Do you understand? Because when you execute the action in the world, and the outcome that happens is you die, you just die. So you don't actually get to do the next step. When you're simulating, you say, oh, that means I will die. So that's like bad thing. So I simulate and avoid that path. Okay? Simulation is always better than execution. But this idea works fine. So it's RTDP, both a reinforcement learning method and a given a model, finding the optimal policy method. In one case you simulate, another case you execute. Here, of course, I'm thinking of it more in terms of the execution part. Okay? And one other idea that's related, it's a quite a neat point, is the problem with RTDP is well known that, okay, first of all, here is the issue. One thing that I didn't tell you is, how did I pick this action A2? I told you how the, you know, actually go back here. I told you how I picked the outcomes by tossing the coin. How did I pick the action A2? You should have asked me. Basically, I do the current greedy action. Okay? So there is always some value function in front of you. With respect to that, you pick the action with the best Q value. Okay? And do it. So that's why it's called a greedy trial, really. Okay. Now, you know, you can also do variations on this. For example, you can do, instead of greedy trial, you can do with probability P, you pick the greedy action. With 1 minus P, you pick any other action. That will throw in exploration. If you're doing it as reinforcement learning, where you actually don't have the model, you, if you always do the greedy thing, you will never, even if you live forever, you'll never converge to optimum. Okay? Anyway, so that's the idea, where basically you're picking the greedy Q value action to compute the thing. Now, one of the things that's well known, you know, in the paper that you read called the LRTDP, labeled RTDP, there's a word label in it, which I didn't explain until now. What I explained to you is basically what they explain in the introduction of the paper, saying previous work has done RTDP, which is what I just explained to you. Okay? Now, the one interesting thing about RTDP is if you're doing the greedy trials, you're guaranteed to, you know, you're likely to get correct values for the most likely states very fast. But if you want to say that you can stop only after every state gets its correct value, then the question would be convergence. Okay, so basically RTDP, what it tries to do, in fact, I wish I have a picture, let me show you. I might be able to show you the picture. What RTDP does is, yeah. So, you know, these are the kinds of pictures, the time and whether or not the values are converging, the values of the various states are converging, okay? And in this particular case, this is actually pictures from the LRTDP paper that you read. So you can go back and look at them more carefully. And one of the points they make is that RTDP tends to converge to the likely states fast, but it takes forever to converge to the less likely states. Okay? Whereas LAO star tends to do slower, but you know, the absolute convergence for LAO star is better than RTDP normally. And then this paper that you read, essentially, and now you can go back and read it, what its point is that the reason RTDP has this problem is because of its greediness. Okay? And it's likely to avoid, because you're doing simulation, right? Because you're tossing the coin, you are less likely to get to states that are less likely to happen. And if you don't get to those states, you don't update their values. So they'll never get their optimal values. You might say, who the heck cares? You know, that's a less likely state. Okay? But optimal policy, I mean, you have to have, if you want to have optimal policy, at least optimal policy for the reachable space. Okay? Optimal value and policy for the reachable space. So the interesting change that they do is they realize that one of the issues in RTDP is that each trial is essentially has to end in the goal. Okay? And what they wind up pointing out is you can start realizing the parts of the, if you keep track of the parts of the space which have already reached their, which have reached their optimal values already, they converged. Then you can force RTDP to start looking at the other direction. Now for that to happen, you need to have some way of keeping track of which states have reached a point where their value is never going to change anymore. In that case, avoid going into those states. Okay, so these are as good as goal states. If you reach them, these are like goal states. So the idea is there is this labeling mechanism which tells you solved. So it tells you, you know, this label called solved is given to states. Only the goal states originally contain the solved label. And then as the search progresses, under certain conditions, you can be sure that a particular state's value can no longer change. Here is a classic case in point. Here is a state, here is a goal state. Here is a state. Okay, this state, currently its best action is this direction, based on the values right now. And all its other actions have higher Q values, higher Q costs. In this scenario, there is nothing that can happen which will make the state change its mind as to what its optimal action is. And so there is nothing that will happen that will make this state change its mind as to what its optimal value is. So previously I used to just say this is solved. Now I propagate and say this is also solved. And now my trial, if it ever hits a solved node, I stop the trial. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the cute point. The question, of course, is how to make sure that the labels, the solved labels, are propagated correctly, such that if you ever say for a state which is not actually solved, that's been solved, then you won't get optimum. So the entire paper is to, you know, this is the simplest case where you can clearly see that you can say this is solved and nothing will happen. Okay, there are other cases where there would be interaction between a set of states and they will all get solved together. You cannot give one of them the solved label without giving the other the solved label. And those are the interesting cases which the paper spends more time discussing. So essentially they are providing an extra procedure for propagating the solved labels. And the solved labels, and then now the, during the RTDP trials, as soon as you hit any state which is solved already, you stop, which is like not going through solved states indefinitely. And that increases its convergence rate significantly. So that's what LRTTP was doing. Okay? So that's what, backpropagate solved labeling, stop trials when they reach any solved state, terminate when S0 is labeled solved. Cute idea. Okay? Again, this is again in the space of states, directly in the space of states. And the nice thing about RTDP is it can be seen as a reinforcement learning algorithm, or it can be seen as a simulation of the existing model algorithm. Okay, so the good news is we did this. Okay. And what I want to do is start talking about this, and then next class when we come back, we'll do a little bit more of this and somewhat of this, and both of them in the context of the current probabilistic planning competition. Okay, whatever algorithms I have described to you is just a tip of the iceberg. People have come up with like thousands of algorithms for, not thousands, maybe hundreds of algorithms for supposedly solving MDPs efficiently. Okay. For example, there are all these things. For example, other types of advances. You can order the Bellman backups to maximize the information flow. You can partition the state space and combine the value iterations from the different partitions. Okay? Or you can do external memory version of the value iteration. So if you have a very large space and if you cannot keep it in the RAM, then you need to keep it on the disk. Okay? Now, you know, so we become database people and we start doing external memory value iteration. And there is work in 2007 and there's another extension of that work that is showing up in 2008 this year. Okay? And there's a lot more other variations of the, you know, in fact, there's one class of algorithms that I wish I covered is actually a great class of algorithms. I might cover it, but let me mention it, what it is. It's basically policy gradient algorithms. That is, do local search in the space of policies. Local search in the space of policies. It's different from policy iteration. Policy iteration is essentially doing the full search, okay, until it reaches convergence. Policy gradient does a gradient descent, and it works well only when the policies can be easily represented in some parameterized form. And then you get to differentiate and compute gradients. Okay. In fact, that's a great algorithm. In fact, a planner which supposedly used policy gradient technique to solve stochastic planning problems won the probabilistic planning competition. And I'm surprised that Sang-Wook didn't yell at me. It was the planner that actually took part in the planning competition, and it was a brand name probabilistic planner. And the planner, remember I told you long back about FF replan? Which was essentially solving stochastic planning problems by just picking one determinization, planning, and finding the best first action, doing it, and then waiting for the world to tell it whether or not what happened, and then doing the next action. So it was like doing the online version. Okay, and FF replan still wins if it actually was in the competition. Okay. And what we will do next class actually is to talk about a version of FF3 plan in general, which if you think of what FF3 plan does, it basically is determinizing a transition graph. One way of determinizing the transition graph is to pick the most likely transition. Another is to pick all transitions and assume they are all independently possible. So those are all outcome determinization and a single most likely outcome determinization. And you know, we'll talk about next class about this paper that Sangbuk has written for this IIII, which is essentially going to do these multiple futures, sample futures, and compute over all the futures and take the average. Okay, and then decide, use that to do the action. Okay. Let me see. What is the time?
4:30.
What?
4:30.
So 4:45. I think I should probably stop here. But let me actually show you where I'm going to go next class, so that you know I don't have to do an entire reintroduction to just get some sort of a light back into your eyes. So we'll be looking at factored representations. And we could talk about, we will wind up talking about, if you go back to the original big thick paper, you know, you can talk about actions as dynamic Bayes networks. And in particular, a version of dynamic Bayes network called two-slice dynamic Bayes networks. You can also, a version of this representation is this, you know, basically the strips operations, where essentially you directly split the outcomes into mutually exclusive sets. This entire set will happen. Okay, and so each of these correspond to a strips operator essentially, and there's a probability that that strips operator will happen. That's the probabilistic strips operator representation. Both of these are described in the Boutillier paper. Okay, what is interesting, I'll skip over this. What's interesting is that we will talk about the current standard for representing probabilistic actions. You know, we had standards for, you know, deterministic actions, PDDL. We had standards for durative actions, PDDL 2.1. And you need a standard for representing, you know, probabilistic actions. The current standard for the stochastic planning computation is appropriately named PPDDL, probabilistic PDDL. Okay, and it essentially uses a representation like this, which suddenly starts, you at least should feel more comfortable, because they look like the kind of actions you used to see before we got into this entire explicit state space representations. Okay, and they wind up being closest to probabilistic strips operators. Okay, and so what we'll talk about next class is the probabilistic planning computation, which uses this kind of input. You know, the domains are described in this kind of input. And you'll be made to read two papers. One is PPDDL description, you know, just so that you have an idea of how the actions are represented. And then we'll talk about one way of solving these problems that seem to actually work quite well. Okay. One other aspect of the probabilistic planning competition is that the way the competition is set up, they are not checking to see whether or not you computed optimal policy in a certain amount of time. Instead, they are trying to see whether you are succeeding. It doesn't matter whether you use probabilities, whether you use fuzzy logic, whether you use magic. You know, my question is, in the real world that I set up for you, are you succeeding more often than your friend? Okay. And so the way they set up, of course, is they make a simulator, and then they send the state to the planner, current state to the planner. This is FOMDP, fully observable microdecision process. So the planner knows what is the current state. And then all it needs to do is send back to the simulator, this is the action I want to do. And then the simulator says, okay, here is the state that you get back in return. Then the planner says, here is the action I want to do. And when you reach the goal state, you say, wow, I won. And then, you know, they say you have won this in this case. And, you know, these many actions you did and you won in this case. Okay, now the competition does not care as to whether. And the action representation for the entire domain is given up front. It's not reinforcement learning. You do know for each action that you do what is the simulator simulating. You know the exact probabilities that the simulator has access to. That's why it's MDP, not reinforcement learning. Okay? And the competition doesn't care as to whether you take this entire description, compute the optimal policy using any of the methods we described, and then just start using that optimal policy. Okay, or Whether you, every time you get a state, you try to think a little bit and figure out what the action is. The total time is controlled. You know, if it's in 30 minutes, I think, you know, if you don't reach the goal state, don't die, then they'll say you're done. You have to start once more again, a new trial. And the success is computed in terms of, you know, percentage of trials that you win and the average length of the trial. It's a reasonable idea which puts online versus offline algorithms on the same substrate. It basically, you could be using either one. Okay? It's in that context that in the first two competitions, FFD plan won. Okay, while other people actually were computing, many people were doing offline planning, FFD plan was basically doing an online planning where it gets the current state and very quickly tries to figure out the shortest path using most likely determinization. And then there is another version of FFD plan which corresponds to taking the state and finding the shortest path using all outcome determinization, which also I described to you. And both of them basically, and so there has been a reasonable interesting, you know, controversy saying, well, it so happened that Fang Wook also set up the second competition. And even though he says he didn't make it be better for him, there was all these questions as to whether or not the benchmarks somehow were the wrong ones. And this wouldn't be the first time we would say that, right? Because I already said that for temporal planning competition, where benchmarks are all sort of crazy. So the people and then actually came up with benchmarks which would sort of make it hard for these kind of replanning approaches to not do well. And there's an entire paper talked about probabilistically interesting planning domains. You could either think of that, you can also think of that as the domains that Fang Wook will have trouble, FFD plan will have trouble with. And what we'll basically look at is it's really a more reasonable idea of how much work you are planning to spend. If you're doing determinations, if you consider multiple futures and then pick the best action with respect to all the futures that you have looked at, the more futures you look at, the better off you are. All outcome determinization is not that. It assumes that you get to pick the shortest future because it puts each possible future in the transition graph at the same time. So keep all this in mind. You will read two things, PPDDL paper and this hindsight optimization paper. And we'll have fun discussing them next time. Yes, sir.